Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Thanks to Joe Susan, Bucknell head football coach, for joining us in the previous half hour. And still to come in the next half hour will be George Schroeder of USA Today. And in a few moments, Ross Tucker. Great work he does all the time. First of all, our play-by-play calls of the day. 29 years to the day of the Kirk Gibson home run to win Game 1 of the World Series. Justin Turner steps to the plate for the Dodgers.
Turner with a fly ball to center field. It's way back at the wall. A three-run walk-off home run for Justin Turner. The Dodgers are up 2-0, and they are going crazy.
Charlie Steiner with a call on the Dodgers radio network, and then locally on Friday night, we'll slice of history.
And that will do it. The Shikellamy Braves, for the first time, will not share the Heartland Conference Division I title. They will own it by themselves, and doing it by making a complete run through the Pennsylvania Heartland Athletic Conference Division I unscathed. Check one of the three boxes on your preseason to-do list. Shikellamy, 48, Mifflinburg, 7.
Kevin Herr with a call on News Radio 1070 WKOK on Friday night. And very pleased to be joined now by Ross Tucker. Great work as always. He had Bears and Ravens yesterday. Ross, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, Steve, always good to talk with you, man. You got to do me a favor, though, at some point, because I've listened to you so often, and you know I grew up a big Penn State fan. I just need to hear you say, like, great block by Ross Tucker. I just got to hear you say that at some point.
At some point, you always
want that as growing up a Penn State fan.
Well, so one time, so it's like Barkley 2050. What a block by Tucker at the 10 and into the end zone touchdown.
Yes, yeah, I'll take it. Man, is he fun to watch, by the way. It's highly, highly enjoyable. But, yes, thank you for doing that for me. You guys, you and Jack do a great job, and it's nice that when I'm driving anywhere around the country, I can always just Google on SiriusXM what channel you guys are on and be able to listen usually.
Well, appreciate that. I want to ask you about the Bears-Ravens game, because you had it yesterday. Chicago has now beaten both the Steelers and the Ravens. What did you see yesterday out of the Bears, including former Nittany Lion Adrian Amos, who brought one to the house?
Yeah, that was awesome. I was happy for him. I mean, he's from Baltimore, and I think they said he had 50 family and friends there. So can you imagine? You know, it was his first game back in Baltimore as an NFL player, and he had what ended up being, you know, I guess it ended up going to overtime, but at the time, we thought it was the game-clinching. I think I said game-clinching touchdown because I really did not expect the series of events that happened afterwards to actually happen. So I was really, really happy for him. You know, I thought the Bears had a great game plan, Steve. I mean, they really did. They not only did they just pound it and pound it and lean on their defense and lean on the running game and their own line, which is pretty good, but on third down, they quick counted everything so that the Ravens didn't really have a chance to get any exotic blitzes in or to confuse Trubisky, because anytime third down happened, the Bears would quick count it and they already had to play call it and they would just go and call it. That way, the Ravens really had to play man-to-man and didn't have a chance to get anything going that could really trip Trubisky up. I thought that was well done.
Really well done. What is the Aaron Rodgers injury? What does that mean to jumble up the NFC, period, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I thought there were four really good teams before. I thought coming into week six, Carolina, Philadelphia, Atlanta, and Green Bay were probably the most impressive teams in the NFC to me. And then Philadelphia went, and the Eagles beat the Panthers, which was significant for them. The Falcons were up 17-0 on the Dolphins, and somehow, you know, the Dolphins come back to win that one. I still can't believe that. And then Aaron Rodgers goes down, and the Packers lose. So it was a heck of a weekend, really, for the Eagles, who are now in the driver's seat. They've played most of their games on the road. They'll be at home for the majority of the rest of the season, and you know, they've got a golden opportunity to get a bye here and certainly to win the division. I'll be on the sideline Monday night when they play the Redskins. And, you know, the Redskins are the only team in the division that only has two losses. So if the Eagles can beat them Monday night at home and get to 6-1 and knock the Redskins down to 3-3, and at best the Cowboys will be 3-3 at that point, although Cowboys are going to have an uphill battle now with Zeke Elliott looking like he will get suspended for six games. Could be the Eagles' turn this year.
Could very well be. The fact that Philadelphia got pressure with four and getting Fletcher Cox back was a big reason why. The fact on Thursday night they could get pressure with four, what does that do for Jim Schwartz defensively as to what he can do with the other seven out there?
Well, that's what he wants to do. You know, he's always been a guy that's does not blitz very much, feels like he needs to get there with four, and that's why those guys are so impactful. I mean, Fletcher Cox, you know, the guy that he bull rushed back into Cam to cause that interception, you know, I mean, Trey Turner just got a huge contract extension with the Carolina Panthers. I mean, he's one of the third guards in the league, and Fletcher Cox just drove him back like it was high school. I mean, it's really, really impressive. He's country strong, and I say all the time, and I think college football is the same way, Steve. I'd say after quarterback, the most important position is defensive line, and probably in particular defensive tackle. And if you look at the teams that have been elite in college football, you know, the Alabama and Clemson, just look at their D linemen. I mean, look at their D tackles. They are just different. They look different. I think Penn State's getting there. I don't know that they have enough of those guys yet, but they're certainly getting there. They have more depth and more speed in the NFL. The Eagles have a very good defensive line, which I think helps to make up for the fact that their corners are average at best. I mean, if you're getting that kind of pressure, and you know you're going to get that kind of pressure, you can have your corners play it that way. You know, you can have your corners be more aggressive to take away the underneath stuff, because you know that if they try to go deep or if the quarterback holds it, that one of your guys, whether it's Brandon Graham or Vinnie Curry or Derek Barnett or Fletcher Cox or Jernigan, one of those guys is going to get home in that time.
And also you can drop a linebacker into a spot, for example, where suddenly the depth of the drop makes a big difference to help out the corner, or you can rotate a safety to help the corner.
Correct. It lets you be a lot more sound in the secondary. You can play a lot more zone behind it, and you can just be a lot more comfortable knowing that you're going to get – I mean, it's just – trust me, I went against them. And those guys, there's only so many of those guys. And you can say that about any position in the NFL, but there's a real scarcity of quarterbacks that are high-level players, and there's scarcity of dominant defensive linemen, in particular dominant defensive tackles. I mean, those guys, especially because, you know, if they're coming off the edge – kind of easier to slide that way or to chip or to somehow, you know, run through the guy's outside armpit to try to slow them down. Those interior guys, man, I mean, they can really make life difficult for you.
All right, so now we are here at this stage. Is there any team that, in your opinion, is a dominant team in the NFL, or has the veneer been washed off of everybody?
I don't know. I don't know that I feel like – I don't know that I'd say that there's a dominant team right now. I mean, I still feel pretty good about the Chiefs, even though they lost.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I feel pretty good about the Eagles. The teams I thought had a chance to be really dominant, the Steelers and the Patriots, you know, don't you just feel like they'll be there at the end? It's like they always are. I mean, sure. they're, you know, usually with the Patriots, there's no drama. There's been a little drama this year. But the Steelers, there's always some drama. I mean, the Steelers are, they have an uncanny ability to lose to teams that are worse and beat teams that might be better. It's unbelievable. It's like somehow they need to. You see that, you know, obviously in college football over the weekend, four top 10 teams losing. But
right.
the teams that were unranked, by the way, sometimes it's like you got to psychologically try to convince your players that they're playing somebody else.
I wanted to ask you about that because I've been a big advocate that in college football right now, there's a college basketball tournament mentality of the whole thing, survive in advance. Four more didn't do it this weekend, Washington, Washington State, Clemson, Auburn. How do you view college football right now, Ross?
You know how I feel like it's changed a little bit, though? Like, if Alabama lost, it doesn't really feel like it would matter that much. And
that's
if
right.
you know, Clemson lost, if Clemson wins the rest of their games, they're going to be in the college football playoff. You know, I mean, if they went out and they win the ACC, it's hard to imagine them not being in the college football playoff. And I feel the same way about Ohio State. I mean, that was a bad loss to Oklahoma at home. But does anybody have any doubt that if Ohio State runs the table and wins the Big Ten, that they're gone? I mean, they're gone. And
right.
what's weird about it is, you're better off losing a non-conference game, and you're better off the earlier in the season you lose, the better. It's kind of bizarre. Now, the issue is if you lose a second game, you know, then you're in trouble. So I don't know. I mean, we could talk about it, but I think that matchup for Penn State, they got to get past Michigan first, but the matchup for Penn State at Ohio State, it's going to be very difficult the way Ohio State's playing right now. They're playing awesome. I actually think, even if Penn State loses, though, they have a decent chance of still getting in the college football playoff if they win the rest of their games and Ohio State ends up getting tripped up after they play Penn State by Michigan State or Michigan or maybe even in the Big Ten championship game down the line, depending on, you know, what Wisconsin's record is when they go into that game. So there's a lot of interesting scenarios that are still going to play out, but I can't remember the last time Ohio State lost two home games. And boy, I mean, there were people that were calling for JT Barrett to get benched after the Oklahoma game, and he's been unbelievable. Their whole team has been lights out since that game. Now, they haven't been playing great teams, but still, they've been dominant.
Yeah, I think what Luke Fickell, the 2011 season when he had the Stephens, the last time they lost two home games in one season. When you look at Penn State, six games, at least you have a body of work to look at. Obviously, the schedule in front is going to be tough. But what do you think of this football team so far?
Just really impressed with the defense more than anything. I mean, Saquon's ridiculous. You know, I do some stuff in Harrisburg and podcasts where I talk about Penn State football. And, you know, I grew up with all of them. You know, I mean, I grew up with D.J. Dozier first. Kurt Warner was a little bit before my time, but D.J. Dozier and then Blair Thomas. And, you know, it's I just want people to realize, like, I think we're watching the best one. I mean, I was teammates with Kajana Carter and with the Redskins in 01. He was tremendous, and Saquon reminds me of him a little bit, just bigger and better. It's remarkable. I hope Penn State fans, I think they do realize how truly unique he is. I think he's the best one of them. I'm so impressed the last few weeks with McSorley. You know, the ice in his veins against Iowa, and then what he did against Northwestern. You know, he was awesome in that game. He doesn't get enough credit that he deserves. And I still hear people chirping about Tommy Stevens sometimes. Look, I know Tommy Stevens physically looks great, but McSorley just produces over and over and over again. But probably even more than that, Steve, their defense, man. I'm watching that Northwestern game thinking, who are these guys? I mean, they're too deep across the board. It's like they're a hockey team bringing in line changes. Their outside linebackers are fast as lightning. They're flying around. They're rolling in 10 guys on defense. Shaka Toney's going from speed to power with the one-hand long arm. I actually saw James Franklin and Sean Spencer on Saturday here in Harrisburg. They were at the Harrisburg Central Dolphin game watching Micah Parsons play. And I live here in Central Dolphin School District, and I was just telling Sean how impressed I was with the way he's got that D-line playing. I mean, it's to think about where they were, Steve, last year in those Pitt and Michigan games, yeah, and where they are now, it's just, I mean, they're light years better.
Hey, I have to ask you before you go, Ross, about something, that a product I really like that you're really deeply involved with, and that's Ball Cannon, recreational football throwing machine. Tell us just a little bit more about that and how people can get hooked in with it.
Yeah, you know, you'll appreciate this, Steve, because a buddy of mine from my hometown invented it, and I actually bought one for my buddy who's an orthopedic surgeon, and he's got three boys. He's a Penn State guy. He wrestled at Penn State, and he actually took one, I think maybe the Georgia State game. He took it up to Penn State. You know, I always look at it for, like, 5 to 15-year-olds in the backyard, and it's, I can't imagine a better gift for the holidays than a ball cannon if you have a kid, like I said, in that age range. But he actually took it up to Penn State for tailgating, and he said everybody was stopping by. Everybody was getting in line. Can I use it? Can I try? I never even thought of it as a tailgate thing. I do see, though, like the Jets. Is that like 4 or 5 NFL teams use them now at their Fan Fest deals. It's really pretty cool. It's taken off. I'm really happy for the guy, and I'm happy to make sure people know about it because it's awesome. And I'm very proud that something like this is being made in my hometown. Again, it's ballcannon.com. It's from Reading, Pennsylvania. Why missing specifically? Just check out the video if you're listening. It's very, very impressive.
Yeah, check it out because it's a really great YouTube video, and I think it'll show you everything it can do and how actually not only how it can help you, but how much fun it actually can be.
No question.
Ross, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks so much. You do great work, and I really appreciate the time you gave us today.
Anytime, Steve. You know that. Love hearing your voice. And I think I'll be in Green Bay in my hotel room Saturday night, but maybe I'll mute the TV and turn you guys on.
All right. Sounds great, Ross. Thank you.
See you guys.
Ross Tucker. It's an all Ross Tucker day, by the way, Sean. On earlier with Dan, right?
Yeah, hung out with the Danettes in the man cave and got back to his own man cave just in time to give us a call.
He is really, Ross is really smart, great analyst, does so many things really, really well. He's just a great guy, though, all right? Just a great guy. Okay, you didn't happen to get a text from the suit, did you?
I did not, believe it or not.
You figure there'd at least be some thanks, some recognition.
You would think, you know? It's not like he asked me to do that.
I mean, I thought I requested it.
You did.
And I thought, you know, I thought we played it up big. I thought we were serious about it.
You certainly did. You were right to the point. Boom, gave him his props.
All kidding aside. And you could tell Ross was impressed. I mean, I don't have a 3-point checklist. I know that. I didn't.
When it comes to your show opens and closes, you don't. That's right. Well,
I don't have a 3-point checklist on anything. Maybe we need to have him come on briefly just to explain what the 3-point checklist is.
Okay.
Is it conference title, district title, state tournament?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. League, district, state.
Does he get a t-shirt out of it?
Or he could be hoping for a hat. Beggars can't be choosers.
Boy, that's a motto of his life. All right. We'll come back. He did a good job. Didn't he do a good job on that?
He did a really good job on that. I think he did.
You know? Yeah. I'm sure if we listen to all of it, there's some personalized moment in there. I had a crystal ball. All right. You're on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance.
There are a lot of places to get insurance coverage, but only one place in the Susquehanna Valley ready to put 4 generations of experience to work for you. Hi, I'm Adam Purdy. At Purdy Insurance, we take the time to talk with you and find the right coverage for your needs. Everyone's situation is unique, so our approach is to customize coverage to best protect you. Whether it's home, auto, or business insurance solutions you need, call, email, or stop in to see how our commitment to personal service can help protect what matters to you.
We'll be right back. naturally, during the break, the suit had to walk in and attempt to accept plaudits for his work on Friday night. It's amazing that for a decent-sized building, how small the building is, Sean.
It didn't take long. Usain bolted down the hall. It's like, wait, I just want to make sure that... I just want to make sure you gave credit. And it's like, we certainly did give credit. We weren't making fun.
We gave credit.
We did.
Now, if I were him, I wouldn't have thrown Sarah out of the way. What kind of organization is this? Get out of the way. I got to go on the air.
He's trying to do news here. Come on.
I mean, Sarah's trying to work here. She's a responsible journalist. I couldn't believe when he said that he was awake for 2.5 hours Thursday night writing that.
I would have thought an hour and a half.
Well, it was perfect, so the extra hour paid off.
Having trouble trying to figure out what new vehicle to buy?
Stop!
SMC has all your bases covered.
Compare Ford, Lincoln, Kia, and Hyundai,
all at the dealer who has been satisfying more customers
for over 100 years.
53 Ford F-150s starting at $23,994. Sunbury Motors has your compact SUVs covered. 46 Ford Escapes starting at $19,925. Take 3112 off all 17 Hyundai Tucsons. Kia Sportages start at just $23,553. SMC has your mid-size SUV in stock. Right now, 2018 Kia Sorento start at $24,999 with 21 Sorentos to choose from. Take up to $49.49 off 2017 Hyundai Santa Fe Sports and up to $5,000 off a Lincoln MKX. Sunbury Motors has all your bases covered for your next new vehicle. Go to sunburymotors.com to compare your next new Ford, Lincoln, Kia, or Hyundai. Sunbury Motors, satisfying more customers, selling more cars. A tradition of trust since 1915.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Customer service means everything to them. I don't care whether it's auto, home, life, business insurance. They have the ability to find you the right insurance at the right price. Make sure that you're covered and within your budget. And if there's a claim, they jump right in there because they are your partner. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. By the way, Navarro Bowman, after being released by the 49ers, has signed with the Oakland Raiders. So he doesn't have to move. He doesn't change houses. At least not until he goes to Vegas. There you go. Time now for the Sports Bozo of the Day. Now, did you watch the Patriots-Jets game yesterday?
Bits and pieces. Sean? Yeah, a little bit on Red Zone. Mm-hmm.
Did you see the call?
Oh, the touchdown takeaway?
Yes.
Quite interesting. I mean, I'm getting closer and closer to the screen, just looking to see where the ball was compared to the pylon and if it was actually across the line.
Well... They're trying to explain it on a conference call today. And on the conference call, Al Riveron, who's the senior vice president for officiating, said it was clear and obvious to overturn the Seferian-Jenkins touchdown, Austin Seferian-Jenkins. He explained his replay decision, which his predecessors, by the way, disagreed with and drew criticism, gee, stunningly, from the Jets. Riveron said the ball was loose when Seferian Jenkins went airborne and was contacted by a defender, making it a fumble. By rule, a player has to reestablish possession before he hits anything out of bounds. And the Jets tight end, according to him, did not do so. The ball went out of bounds across the goal line and through the end zone. He said it was clear and obvious is the standard to use to overturn any call, and this definitely met that criteria. Except there are a lot of people that don't say it was clear and obvious. Now, there's still 8:24 remaining, and the Jets were down 10 at that point. And because the ball was ruled a fumble out of bounds, the play resulted in a touchback, and the Patriots got the ball. Mike Pereira, now with Fox, and Dean Blandino, now with CBS, or excuse me, he's with Fox as well, both said Sunday they would not have overturned the play. Riveron said that no comment on that. That's just their judgment. Safarian Jenkins said, yeah, I bobbled the ball, but I still felt like I scored. So, there you go. That was an interesting play. Seemed to work in the Patriots' favor. All right. Somebody who's always spot on, gets it done, great respect, and is always in the right spot at the right time is George Schroeder of USA Today. George, welcome. It's the first time we've had you. Great to have you on the show.
Sure, glad to. That's the first time I've been described as that in a long time, maybe ever.
No, you earned it. Hey, last weekend was a weekend billed as a weekend with no ranked teams playing one another. And yet, it was one of the wildest weeks of the season. What did you learn about this past weekend?
Well, I mean, I don't know that we learned a ton. I've got this sneaking suspicion, which probably means I'm wrong, that we might be going to see more of this, that parity is really here in college football, with the possible exception of Alabama. And that's in part because Alabama is really, really good and very, very talented, and in part because the SEC is down around Alabama. Mm-hmm. But I think everywhere else, it feels like there's a group of 8 or 10 teams that maybe could or would, should maybe be in the playoff. But there's a bunch of teams below them that can beat them on a given weekend. And that's what I kind of think maybe we saw last week. Now, I talked with Dino Babers yesterday, the Syracuse coach. Obviously, they pulled off the big upset of Clemson. And he said, you know, he thought maybe it was just going to be a blip of a weekend, and it'll be the kind of thing that will cause the favorite teams to sort of harden up and say, hey, we can't let this happen to us. So I guess there's a couple ways to look at it, but doesn't it always seem like it happens this way, that the weekend when you have no ranked teams matched against each other is when a bunch of ranked teams go down to unranked teams and it's a crazy weekend?
And you're absolutely right, George. It seems like that has been the recent pattern. I've likened this college football playoff to, in some ways, the NCAA basketball tournament. I feel like it's a survive in advance, and right now there are, what, 6 teams so far that have survived in advance, and they're the only 6 that still control their own destiny.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I won't be surprised this year. You know, obviously it didn't happen a year ago, but I won't be surprised this year if we end up with a 2-loss conference champion potentially getting into the playoff, especially if it's from the Big Ten, because of the perceived strength, at least right now halfway through, of the Big Ten East. So, but that said, you're right. It's survive in advance. You don't want to be that team in that position. And frankly, you don't want to be the team with the one loss to a, especially if it's a bad loss. You don't want to be Oklahoma right now, right, which has perhaps the best win in the country right now, but the worst loss of any contender at this point. You know, my guess is they'd be okay if they finished 12-1, but it's a bad loss. You don't want to be compared against the other 12-1 conference champion.
I have to ask you about Tennessee. They've gone 10 straight quarters without a touchdown. Why?
Because they're not very good. I mean, I think that's the best answer.
Thank you for your honesty.
Yeah. Well, obviously they've made a quarterback change, and that didn't do much for them. Last week. I think what you're looking at is a team that where it's just not been clicking all year. They were very fortunate and had to have a fortunate turnover in the season opener against Georgia Tech on Labor Day, or they would be 2-4 right now. I think they're 3-3. I'd have to go back and look.
Right.
You know, and they just, the season, it was pretty clear they were not the better team that day. And, you know, they haven't been the better team several days. When you mess around, by the way, that 10-quarter streak without a touchdown goes back. The last touchdown they scored was in the second quarter of a game that became an escape against UMass.
That's right.
So it's just not a very good team. And it's pretty clear that mental, you know, a mental piece of it comes into play at some point, because it doesn't feel like they're playing hard for Butch Jones. And I think everybody inside the program is thinking the same thing that everybody outside the program's is thinking, which is it's just a matter of time, and you know, when do you decide to pull the plug on the coaching situation there.
Which now gets to LSU. They were seemingly in that boat in terms of lack of confidence by the fan base a couple of weeks ago. Has back-to-back wins, especially the one they had over Auburn, started to change that opinion, or is it still wait and see?
Well, I'm sure it has changed that opinion, but the first thing about college football is we our opinions swing so violently from week to week to week, way
that's
more
right.
than they should. Because now all of a sudden, Gus Malzahn's on his way out, right? I mean,
right.
that's supposedly the deal.
Right.
Look,
well, that's because college football is a week-by-week report card.
Well, it absolutely is. And, you know, the problem with it right now is sort of, I think social media sort of exacerbates this. I think it's true not just in sports, and not just in college football, and not just in sports, but in other things too. But in college football, there's rarely a let's sit back at the end of the year and really see what the season was like. It is exactly what you said. It's a week by week report card, and it's really what did you do for me lately? And so it's really interesting. To go back to your original question, look, I still have reservations about Ed Orgeron. It was mm-hmm. a good win to beat Florida, but Florida's not very good,
right.
and they eked their way to the win over the Gators. It's a good win just because they need to win. Beating Auburn, you know, that's a really good kind of intestinal fortitude kind of comeback. But that's one of those plays where if you're Auburn, you're going to kick yourself for not making one play or maybe two plays when you're up 20 to nothing that makes it, say, 27 to nothing, and then it's off to the races. They were better than LSU, and they'll be kicking themselves forever. And maybe that's why Gus Malzahn eventually, you know, won't have a job, because that's a fairly impatient fan base, wouldn't you say? But yeah. I still think Coach O is – let me just put it this way. I had reservations when they made the hire, and I still have reservations. That said, he's definitely shown something the last 2 weeks that I don't know that anybody thought they would show after they lost to Troy at home.
Isn't it ironic? I'll go back a year ago. Wasn't it the feeling that the loser of Auburn, LSU, would lose its coach, Malzahn or Les Miles, a year ago, and it turned out that it was Auburn that won the game?
Yeah, absolutely it was. And, you know, whether that was fair or not to either guy, it absolutely was. And if you recall, LSU thought it had won the game, but they had gotten the playoff too late on the final play. I mean,
right.
it was the Mad Hatter who has had that sort of, you know, complete lack of regard for clock situations all through his career, and it finally got him, and then he was out.
I broadcast the Capital One Bowl, Penn State LSU, where they lost control of the clock at the end of the game and Penn State won it. So I know what you're talking about. Under the credit is credit due on my part, and you may disagree with me, I give Kyle Whittingham all the credit in the world for going for two on the road.
No, I do too. I really do too. And, you know, obviously it's easy to second guess we don't get it. But look, their defense was gassed.
Oh, they sure
I mean,
were.
Just in general principles, I like the move, okay? But in specific to the game, their defense was gassed. They'd lost the 21-7 lead. They'd come back after being down by a touchdown to potentially tie the game or to be within the shot of winning it. And I think he thought, let's win it right here. We're not going to stop them in overtime, and we're going to have a lot harder time scoring in overtime. And I think it was the right move. I'll say this, the folk at the Pac-12 are very happy that Utah, and they would never say this because you don't want to say this about another one of your teams, but had Utah converted to 129-28, the Pac-12 would have had a terrible weekend. As it was, it only had an abysmal weekend.
Right.
With Washington schools losing.
Right, exactly. On the week-by-week report card, has Tom Herman maybe found his quarterback?
I think so. Now, let me just say this. That's the game I was at last week. And so I was impressed with Sam Ellinger. But here's the issue I think I have with him. One, they're having to run him way too much in design runs because they can't run the ball with their line and the running back.
And George got tagged, too. I mean, he got tagged.
Well, he did. Yeah, clean hits, but he definitely got tagged. And And look, he's a big, strong kid. He's 6'2", 230. He's not kind of a scat back dual threat guy. He's a legit dual threat guy. He's not fast, but he's very effective as a runner. But you don't want him running that much. It was 22 carries now. A lot of those were scrambles. Mm-hmm. But here's what I worry about with him as much as the running. I think he has the it factor that you need. I think potentially it's fair to say, okay, maybe this is Texas's quarterback. But his pass game is not much to speak of. Right. And typically with dual threat guys, it's not the passing game that really, you know, what they are is usually what they are. Sometimes they improve in the pass department, but not usually. And so I'd be a little bit concerned about that. So I'm not quite ready to say they've got their guy, mm-hmm. but I think he's a better fit for them and what Tom Herman wants to do and their limitations right now in the run game and things like that than Shane Buechele is, even when he's healthy, because Shane's not as good a runner.
Give me just for you a quick interest on what on Penn State Michigan coming up on Saturday night.
I'm sorry, I lost you for just a half second.
Just a quick interest note from you about your quick thoughts on Penn State Michigan Saturday night.
Well, look, I'm as impressed as anybody with Penn State so far this season. That said, it feels like the season's starting at this point.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the meat of the schedule begins. Michigan is a weird team. Their offense is just so inconsistent, and that's probably the nicest way to describe it. They've got quarterback issues. They've got red zone issues. It's not a very good offense, which is a little bit surprising because I think one of the things that Jim Harbaugh's been good at through his career is creating these sort of smash-mouth offenses that are very effective. Mm-hmm. But their defense is really, really good.
Yeah.
And that has been able to drag them across the finish line. We haven't made our staff picks for the week, and whatever I pick probably is what you want to run away from. But I'm going to pick Penn State. I think they'll win that one. I'm not as confident about next week at this point at Ohio State because I think Ohio State's playing better than it did against Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. But I think Penn State will get by Michigan because you're looking at a team that has a really good defense, but not much of an offense. They certainly hadn't showed it. And maybe they'll go to the young kid at quarterback. That's not necessarily a good recipe either to go on the road and do that at Penn State. But maybe they'll look for a spark. And so if you've got a great defense these days, even if it's tremendous, even if it's great, if you've got, we're in an era now where people don't shut people down when they're great offenses and good quarterbacks. And Penn State obviously has weapons. And so I would be very surprised, unless Michigan comes up with an offense that we haven't seen yet, if Michigan was able to come out with the win.
George, it was an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time today. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, hey, me too. Thanks for having me on.
George Schroeder, USA Today. We'll come back with some final thoughts in a moment, brought to you by Purdy Insurance on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Heartland Conference Champions. As you heard right here Friday night on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steelers looked terrific yesterday. I don't know where the performances for the Steelers come from. One week you're like, how could they possibly lose to that team? Then the next week they go out and go, wow, I'll tell you, they're a Super Bowl contender. There is no level of consistency.
That first half of the Kansas City Chiefs, I mean, those fans in Arrowhead had to have been numb. We're undefeated and we barely have... That's going to be the smallest number of yards of total offense they've probably ever seen at a Chiefs home game. But they came back, made a game out of it, but just great offensive balance for the Steelers. I know Andy Reid has been questioned a lot today, whether he should have gone for that field goal or not. Still very not late in the game where maybe you go for it at that point, but that 3-point swing turned out to be huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes when you watch a team and they struggle, and you finally get down there and you've got something going, you ask yourself if you're going to be able to get down there again. I guess that's sort of me defending him. Because, you don't know how it's going to play out. That's what I try to tell everybody on this show all the time. We can sit here all we want, and say, you know, I think this is going to happen, that's going to happen. But you know what? There isn't a single person on the planet that knows how Saturday's going to play out. Nobody. Can we have some educated guesses, keys, things like that? Sure. But nobody knows.
That's what makes it fun.
Well, that's why we enjoy watching it. This is not the normal formula television. And, you know, where you really can look at the formula play out in front of you. Doesn't mean that television or movies are not enjoyable with formulas, but sports is unpredictable. Nobody knows going in. Quick show of hands, how many thought that the Giants would lose at Denver last night?
Oh, pretty much the big bulk of the country didn't give them a shot last night.
No. Simple as that. That's why you just don't know. Yankees down 2-0 to the Indians. Win the next 3 games against a team that at one point won 22 in a row. But I will go back to what I said right when the playoffs began in baseball. Remember what I said? There were only 2 teams that were 8-2 in their final 10 games. The Dodgers and the Astros. Now, both had slumped in late August and into September, but both clinched with a lot of time, and then both very quietly, unbeknownst, I think, to most people, actually played good baseball down the stretch, but we were so focused in on other races, especially that National League Central race with the Cubs and the American League East race with the Red Sox and the Yankees, that this was kind of under the radar. They already clinched their in. So when you take the playoffs and add it in, the Dodgers have now won 13 of their last 15, and the Astros have won 13 of their last 16 if you include the end of the regular season. And again, in the final 10 games of the regular season, the Astros and the Dodgers were the only 2 teams that went 8-2. Our thanks to Ross Tucker today for being on the show. Our thanks to Joe Susan for being on the show today. Our thanks to George Schroeder of USA Today for being on the show. It's going to be a big week, including Dan Dierdorf and Jim Brandstetter both joining us on Wednesday. Jack Ham on Thursday, Derek Williams Thursday, Dick Girardi Thursday, Rich Scarcella Thursday. We believe we've got Kim Jones lined up at some point this week, too, from NFL Network. And The Suit Wednesday with his Chick-fil-A preview.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.